I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE after a week in which the Emirates have withstood the biggest Iranian retaliatory onslaught for the Trump assassination of Iran's leader, Ali Khamenei. Assets targeted by Iran at the time of this show being made have been in the UAE, Kuwait, Qatar, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Iraq, Cyprus, Israel, the USA, and UK. It comes after perhaps thousands of civilians from Iran to Gaza to Lebanon, from Pakistan to Iraq have been killed because of the Trump decision to carpet bomb Iran. The pretext that a U.S. president used without congressional approval was the threat of imminent attack by Iran against the United States. No one believes it, and Trump's Secretary of State Marco Rubio let slip that it was actually to back up Israel and Netanyahu, who led the Gaza genocide. Tomorrow marks 61 years since LBJ sent the first U.S. Marines into Da Nang, Vietnam, assuring Americans that the USA was not entering a wider war. By the end of 1965, 200,000 U.S. troops were in Vietnam, part of an Indochina adventure that, before the Americans were defeated, would lead to 12 million dead or wounded, with 372,000 dead or wounded Americans. Today, this region is in great danger, casting a shadow of mass poverty across NATO nations because of the shutdown of world energy corridor, the Strait of Hormuz. This all in the anniversary month of when Trump's Director of National Intelligence, Colonel Tulsi Gabbard, testified that Iran was not developing a nuclear weapon. That was all before the Jeffrey Epstein files scandal. Joining me again from Geneva is retired U.S. Navy Captain James Fennell, former Director of Intelligence and Information Operations at the U.S. Pacific Fleet. He is a government fellow at the Geneva Center for Security Policy and co-author of Embracing Communist China, America's Greatest Strategic Failure. Thank you, Captain, for coming back on Going Underground. You're seen as one of the USA's leading naval intelligence experts. So let's get on to the first casualty of war and truth. How do you characterize the information war so far since Trump began bombing Iran and since he assassinated Iran's leader and his family?
Well, it's good to be with you. I would say that, you know, information and propaganda are being used by a lot of people. And I would just say that I'm focused more on actually the combat operations and what is actually happening in terms of the U.S. forces that are arrayed around the region from the Mediterranean down to the North Arabian Sea, and how that progress has come in the first several days of this conflict. And I seem to look and agree with the CENTCOM commander that the strategic trend line is that the United States is advancing and shutting down the military capabilities of the Iranian regime, something that I personally experienced in my deployments to the Gulf over the years, sitting off the coast of Iran, wondering whether or not my ship would be attacked by Iranian forces and whatnot. So this is not new in terms of the confrontation between the United States and Iran. They declared death the United States in 1979 when they stormed and took our embassy. We lost 241 Americans in 1983, which I know personally.
With respect, that doesn't really have anything to do with now. Why didn't the United States retaliate
actually
for that much earlier? I mean, surely you can detect that Trump mentioning that and the U.S. administration mentioning that seems to be some belated attempt to justify the supreme crime of aggression under, as defined at Nuremberg.
Yeah, I would actually disagree with that. Having served in the military, worn the uniform, we've actually don't forget what happened in 1983 and those 241 Americans. We don't forget the USS Cole. We don't forget the Khobar Towers. I was in Khobar Towers just a few weeks before that attack. I could have been killed. So I don't forget any of these things. And the American people and our military don't forget these things. Sometimes it's said that Americans are kind of flighty and have short attention spans, but I would like to remind people in your audience that Americans are not all like that. And there's many Americans that have long memories, and we have not forgotten what the Iranians have done to us and their chance of death to America for many, many years.
Isn't the problem there, though, that whilst, as you say, Americans have not forgotten Iran's attempts to destroy American influence in this region, the problem is that Iran has not forgotten what the Americans have done, supporting chemical weapons in Iraq against that country when the Americans supported Saddam Hussein, let alone their support for the genocide in Gaza. So if you get two countries that are just remembering the past and all the casualties, we must remember the United States shot down a civilian airliner, famously, of the Iranians, they won't have forgotten about that. And as you say, the Americans haven't forgotten about their tribulations. So what were the negotiations all about if both sides and the Iranians deny it? But as you say, the Americans were negotiating, but secretly in their heads, all they were thinking as they negotiated was, you know, we hate you. What does that say about the progress of the war if the United States' motives are clouded by emotional history?
I didn't say they were clouded. I said we haven't forgotten. We haven't forgotten that we're dealing with an adversary that has lied to us and manipulated us and murdered our citizens. So when we go into a negotiation and the president and his team send people in to negotiate about the nuclear program, they're mindful of these past histories and will be very circumspect in accepting or being tapped along, as to use a phrase that some other producers are talking about, in terms of pushing us along to make sure that they can still continue to build up their military capabilities while never intending to give up their program. So I think that's the real issue at the strategic level, was the concern from President Trump and his team, is that no matter what we said, no matter what we did, they were going to continue to build. And even after we struck them last June in Operation Midnight Hammer, that they were back at it again with the help of Russia and China, especially, to rebuild their nuclear arsenal.
Could they deny they have one, of course, but could Iran end this war instantly if they said suddenly that they had actually underground used the highly enriched 400 odd kilos of enriched uranium that the Americans recognize was lost or went missing after the 12-day war? Could Iran just end the war now if they said they have a nuclear bomb?
I don't think that would end the war in any way, shape, or form. We are now in it. And if you listen to the briefings from the Secretary of War, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and the Commander, Operational Commander of Central Command, there is a deliberate targeting list and a plan that's been developed over, I wouldn't just say last 6 months. I mean, it's been developed over years of how to deconstruct the Iranian military capabilities.
Yeah, but I said, so you're saying the Americans would still continue bombing Iran if Iran had a nuclear bomb and threatened to use one?
Well, I don't know how they could use one. I don't believe that we think that they have the capability to all of a sudden take something that was so severely degraded in June and now all of a sudden in under duress in this kind of environment, be able to figure out how to miniaturize it, weaponize it, put it on a warhead and have any possibility of successfully delivering it. So I think
there
that's
was, so there was no imminent threat. So there was no imminent
What's
threat.
That?
So there was no imminent threat.
I would say that right now there's no imminent threat. Who knows about before February 28th?
I mean, what did you think when you saw Secretary of State Rubio let slip out that actually they had to, the Americans had to intervene because Israel was going to attack Iran and the response would be attacks on U.S. bases?
I don't pay attention to a lot of those kind of accusations and statements about what caused this. We are in it now. So that's where my head is at. But in terms of what he said, all I can say is that there was enough evidence there that convinced the President of the United States to take preemptive action, which is something that we have traditionally not done. But in this case, we decided to act in lieu of taking the first hit from thousands, maybe, of Iranian ballistic missiles and one-way attack drones. So we actually saved lives by acting first.
And you don't believe the Iranian government, obviously the Iranian government, which lied about the assassination of their leader in for quite a number of hours. You don't believe them when they say they have underground missile launchers that have not the like of which have not been seen, and they are so far hidden by radar. I mean, I do understand that at the time of this recording, much of the United States' missile systems, radars have all gone down all across the GCC, in Bahrain, Kuwait, UAE, Jordan, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia. The 1AN FPY-2 radar systems have all been destroyed.
I'm not sure of all the details of that. What I would say is, as of this recording, we have reporting that from the start of the conflict, the number of ballistic missiles and the number of one-way drones coming out of Iran have been degraded by 86 and 73% respectively. So their ability to launch missiles has dramatically, and one-way drones has dramatically gone down. I also have no doubt that they had built, as they had told us in this last couple of years, that since going back to 2008, in fact, that they had built underground missile production cities. So there is probably more underground. But what I'm trying to say is, because we have been in this campaign of rolling back their conventional air defense systems and their conventional radars and command and control, now we're in this what they call dynamic targeting environment. So we're flying over Iran, having air superiority, so that if something does come out of one of these underground facilities, their ability to be able to get out and set up and launch will be detected and struck before they can get those off. That's where we're moving towards.
Depending on the radar. Yeah, I don't know whether the 86% figure includes the underground missile capability, which presumably can't be seen. But what if you were advising the enemy, as you see it? What would you tell the Iranian government if you were the advisor there? Just launch one of the hypersonic missiles as a last gasp, seeing it as an existential situation at the Dimona nuclear weapons facility in Israel?
Well, I think if I was the Iranians, I would probably, it would be like having a football helmet on and somebody came up with a cricket bat and smacked me in the head. So first of all, I'd have to figure out what kind of senses I have and my ability to even comprehend what's just happened to me over the last
week. Yeah, I know, Captain, you're going to say you defect immediately, obviously, is going to be your answer.
No, I didn't say that. What I said is my understanding of what's happening to me and my ability to move my arms and legs and my forces, if you will, if I'm the center in Tehran and my bell's been rung, my ability to move my conventional forces may be severely degraded. So now there's assessments that maybe that they've given a local autonomy to their commanders there. Or that's why I believe we're seeing indiscriminate firings of these missiles and one-way drones. But again, the advice that the president and the secretary of war have given is, lay down your arms and seek asylum and you will get it. Now, I don't expect that will happen in any large numbers. It may happen as this goes on. But right now, if I was an Iranian, I'd be in shelter and keeping my head down.
Captain James Fennell, I'll stop you there. More from the former Director of Intelligence and Information Operations at the U.S. Pacific Fleet after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the co-author of Embracing Communist China, America's Greatest Strategic Failure, Captain James Fennell. Captain, we were talking about how successful the Americans have been at, those in Iran and then the global south who support them would say in mass casualty events, but as you say, in strategic victory. It's a very volatile situation. Don't know since this interview has been recorded exactly how the war has progressed. So in a sense, we're slightly handicapped by that. But do you think it's clear? I mean, given the fact that Qatar has shut the gas off, millions of people in Western Europe will suffer the consequences of gas prices. The Americans have spent billions of dollars. To one side, those issues. Was it stupid or clever of the Iranians to attack their so-called brotherly countries of the GCC in the immediate start of the war? Dubai, where I'm speaking to you from, being hit the most, more than Israel. Was it clever or stupid? Why do you think they did that?
Well, first of all, I'm glad that you're safe and your crew is safe from these attacks. And I do think it is incredible to me that they actually did this. For so long, and I spent time in Riyadh in 1994, made deployments to the Gulf, there was always this undercurrent in my perception that the Gulf states lived in a kind of a unstated fear of Iran, and that they, but not enough to actually take any action. And now that the Iranians have preemptively launched attacks at them, it seems to be a unifying force for the Gulf states. and then backed up or led or followed, led by the United States actually taking these actions that I think many people that I had met over the years had wished that the Americans would lead on and take action against Iran. Well, I think it's a unifying...
But it is clear the GCC were against Trump's actions from the beginning, and they still deny the United States any ability to use their territory for this war. There's lots of misinformation about that, clearly.
Well, I think our forces are in the Gulf states. We're in Saudi Arabia. We're in Kuwait. We've got forces in the UAE in terms of our resupplies.
And they're involved in this war. They're involved in this war from this region.
Yes. We've had military forces in the region operating. We actually had the Saudis, and I think Qatar just shot down two this first week, they shut down two F-24 fencers from Iran. So for the first time ever,
that was the Qatari government's forces, apparently. No, but they have been categorical in not allowing the U.S. bases on their territory to be used in this conflict.
I would challenge that. I think we have been using them, at least for command and control and surveillance, certainly.
So did they make themselves a target by allowing that to happen, or did the Americans use the territory in violation of what the governments of the GCC had told the Americans?
I don't know if it's in violation of the governments, but we've been there for years. I mean, the Combined Air Operations Center in Qatar
They've been here for years, but noticeably in the run-up, and there's been a long run-up, there was plenty of warning that Iran got for this conflict. The government of the UAE, the government of Saudi Arabia were explicit in saying no attack on Iran could involve forces based on their territory.
Well, I think that's changed now after they've been attacked.
Okay. I mean, let's just move on then further afield, because as I say, we're slightly handicapped by the ongoing war. We don't know what Iranian retaliation will have happened by the time this is being broadcast. What was your reaction to hearing Trump criticizing Britain over Diego Garcia? Critical base for U.S. operations in Asia. Has the United States basically lost that base, or has one of the side effects of this conflict meant that Britain has had to, as usual, give up its sovereignty and say, of course the United States can use the base on the Chagos Islands?
Actually, a month before this conflict started, I was part of a group that put together a letter to the president stating that we should not allow the U.K. to make such an agreement with Mauritius over something that impacts an agreement that the U.S. and the U.K. had years before about our ability to use Diego Garcia. So I think from a legal standpoint, we have a longstanding priority over the disposition of those islands, and that it was illegal, it was unwise for the prime minister to make such an agreement and then to bring it to parliament. And then when he brought it to his own parliament, he faced a buzzsaw of opposition. And so I think what you saw from the U.S. side was, for the first time again, under President Trump's leadership, a statement to say, we're not on board with this. So don't think that we're going to agree.
Well, given Trump obviously listening to you then, Captain, clearly. I mean, I don't know whether you've told him, I don't know whether he rang you about that. I don't know whether you've rung him about the fact that these THAAD Lockheed systems that have been so successful here in Dubai, the Americans are thinking of removing the ones targeting or trying to defend from Pyongyang, from Seongsan-ri in Korea. You're probably worried about the removal of the THAAD systems, are you, from the southern part of the peninsula?
The discussion of high-end weapon systems like THAAD, Patriot, Standard Missile 2, Standard Missile 3, Standard Missile 6, those negotiations and those stockpiles and munition levels are in full view of the president and his team. That's why on Friday, representatives from the Big Five military and defense firms are going to be in Washington to speak with the president and his team about how to up production. So that movement of these weapon systems from one combatant command theater to another occur frequently. They're occurring now. And I think what we heard from the Central Command commander and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs is we're going to be in this transition from using exclusively standoff weapons to starting to use stand-in weapons, so guided precision-guided munitions. The real issue is these defensive platforms, and there are, as the president said, they're scattered all over the world. And I find it interesting is that the previous administration in the year 2024, in terms of like TLAM, there was zero TLAMs produced in the United States in 2024. So I have some other issues inside American domestic politics about how we have not produced these weapons for so many years and how we provided pallets of cash to the Iranian regime over JCPOA.
Yes, the Trump meeting with the missile makers was at the White House in the past 24 hours. But they'll come too late, these systems, arguably, for the immediate war. And they do not protect against the hypersonic missiles that Iran possesses. Is that correct?
The systems that we have abilities against those. If Iran has hypersonic weapons, where are they?
Well,
we haven't seen any to date.
I mean, by the time this is being shown, maybe they do. I mean, why do you think, for instance, part of the information war is a question? That's why I'm trying to avoid those specific questions, because hypersonic missiles may have been used by the time this is being broadcast. Do you think it was a little pathetic that Tehran denied they hit the Aramco Rustanura refinery, one of the largest refineries, the largest in this region? Why were they trying to imply that these were Israeli attacks on the refinery in Saudi Arabia?
Oh, that's a classic deception move to cause division inside your alliance. So that's what it would seem to me. And oh, by the way, I think the terminal is not closed. It's temporarily shut down until they have a chance to assess the damage from the drones that hit a portion of it.
But why do you think they would do that, given it's so obviously not true, that even arguably their own population might not believe that? I mean, what does that show about the propaganda war from Iran's point of view?
Well, I think it shows, again, there's some degradation to their understanding of what's going on outside of their own borders. They have been severely struck at the national leadership levels, the IRGC levels, and their understanding and command and control communications. So we talk about the kinetic side of this, you know, hot leads on foreheads, but really we need to also comment about cyber and space and what information is actually getting inside Iran. We know that they've already instituted some controls to prevent information being provided to their own citizens, but what about what we're allowing them to see and know and understand? And to be able to communicate amongst themselves.
I mean, I should say that information war obviously continues against populations within NATO countries as well. We have to admit that. But why did Trump actually do this? Only 27% of the American people, according to Reuters Ipsos, supported him starting this war. That's less than 29% towards the end of the Vietnam War in 1973 that approved of a president then, Nixon. And you know, people in America, the United States, don't want this war. There's no sign of any imminent nuclear weapon, according to the IAEA, which some say was anyway full of Israeli spies. Were you surprised? I mean, we had a long warning for this. The Iranians should have known it was coming. Why did he do this, given that clearly the cost to the United States, the cost to Western Europe, even if the war was won quickly, and we've got to say thousands and thousands of civilians in Iran have been killed, and the relatives of those won't forget it as regards future asymmetric warfare. Why did he do this?
Well, I would say, first of all, I've seen other polls that show that he's got support and it's growing, especially as we become more successful. Secondly, the thousands of people that are being killed in Iran are not being killed by the American bombs. They're being killed by the Iranian regime. We don't target civilians. So I think,
Captain, I mean, we know that we know that's not true, though, don't we? I mean, that sounds a bit like it's from the Follies in Vietnam. Well, why? What happened about the school? Well, then explain me this. Why did Pete Hegseth say repeatedly, we are investigating, when it came to the mass carnage at the elementary school in southern Iran? It doesn't take long, given the intelligence is so good that the United States has, that it could assassinate the leader of Iran and his family within the opening minutes of this war, to find out that if it was, as you would have it, an errant missile that hit the elementary school, and I should say there are hospitals and schools all across Iran that are being reportedly hit, When Hegseth was asked about this, he said investigating. Why didn't he admit it was a mistake? Why avoid the subject?
Because he doesn't know the facts and he's waiting for the facts to come in. It could be an errant weapon. That can occur. These are mechanical systems and things can go wrong mechanically. We also know that there's deception and people can say one thing and have identified a facility as something when it's something else. So the idea that Iran would make a school look like a military target is not unprecedented in human history and certainly not in that region. So we don't know the details. What I said, and I'll stand by it, is because I did this as a target intelligence officer, we abide by the law of armed conflict and we do not target civilian populations in any way, shape, or form.
Okay, that does not mean Seymour Hersh is a friend of the show, and I think we've seen the United States' history on civilian targeting, as anyone who's read his books will know. I just got to finally finish, because you are a China expert now, as well as a more broader expert. Do you think China needs to respond preemptively now? It better realize that the United States means business, and after Iran, maybe comes Turkey. That's what Israel wants next. And China may come shortly after that. And China is being far too weak.
Well, the concern that we have and that I've had for my career is that China has told us that they are going to restore Taiwan to the People's Republic of China. They say restore it. It's not correct. It's take Taiwan and put it inside the People's Republic of China. So they're going to, one way or another, take it back, and I'm concerned that they will use military force. So the real issue is that we...
But is now the time to attack? Captain, now's the time to attack while the United States is fighting Iran. Now's the best time for China, right?
I don't think they think that right now. I think they're back to their drawing board saying, we didn't anticipate that the United States would have such success against Iran and be able to shift to the Pacific for the first time. You know, we said in 2011, a pivot to the Pacific, but that didn't really effectively happen. If this events in Iran go as the strategic trend line seems to indicate at this point in time, the United States will be paying a lot more attention, both in terms of strategy, munitions, and operational force structure than we have ever in the last 40 years.
They'll need the Chinese and Taiwanese chips. Thank you, Captain James Fennell. Thank you so much. That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to all those bereaved by today's NATO nation wars of aggression. We'll be back on Monday to talk to the UAE's Director General of the Dubai Public Policy Research Center, which advises key decision makers in this country that has been the main target so far for Iranian retaliation. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.